Hi. As the name of the podcast suggests, I connect a lot of topics together in the service of growing the practice of psychotherapy. As the number of episodes grows, it occurred to me that I could offer you a way to organize the episodes. So I've created playlists. Playlists are compilations of all the episodes on one topic. If you'd like to try this out, there is a link in the show notes to the playlist page, where you will find the categories, and then you click on the category you're interested in, and you'll see all the episodes on that topic. I hope you enjoy it. While you're there, you could sign up for the newsletter if you like. Those come out weekly and are a great way for us to stay in touch, and for you to keep up to date about the podcast and additional events. Hello, and thank you for joining the Connection Therapy Podcast. This is a podcast about the craft of psychotherapy, and we seek to support those who strive to improve their craft by sharing research about the science and stories about the art of psychology. Together, we will explore these findings so you can decide how you want to apply them to benefit your practice. As you've heard on recent episodes of the podcast, I have been learning a lot from Dr. Rahayel Draizma. She's the author of Language, Signs, and Calming Signals of Horses, as well as a second book, Scent Work for Horses. And overall, she's an expert in reading the body language of horses and helping horses acclimate to their human environments the best way possible for both them and their humans. I learned so much from the course she provided, as well as the interview we shared, and I've been thinking a lot about it in terms of the many ways there are implications for the practice of mental health. And this episode is going to highlight some of the ways I am taking what I learned and integrating it into my own practice of psychology. There are three sections I'd like to share with you of how I'm going to incorporate my experiences into my work, and they include observation, body-based training, and the incorporation of cross-disciplinary knowledge. So I'll go through them in that order. The first is observation. Dr. Draizma is a keen observer. I'm sure you picked up on it in the interview episodes, specifically at the end of episode number 50. She is discussing only some of the facial features of horses. Who knew horses could be so expressive with the variety of how they hold their lips, by the way? And then she made a comment along the lines of that we only looked at their facial features, really only part of their facial features, and we could have talked about muscles, posture, and more. Incredible. Incredible. I actually do focus a lot on observation in my own practice quite a bit. My early training experiences with children age 0 to 3 was my first experience of this realization. I remember coming home from practicum assignments and doing something in my daily life, like maybe going to dinner with friends or the grocery store or something, and realizing that the world had opened up to me. I could see things I never saw before in terms of how people were non-verbally communicating with each other and the way their body positions were, the way their facial features were, the way their voice tone moved back and forth. It's like the world just kind of opened a new layer. And I remember realizing something that I should probably let you know, and that is, once you see it, you can't unsee it. And so the world has looked differently to me since that time. I also shared in episodes 2, 3, and 4 of the podcast that my own dissertation research was about how children respond to a therapy dog entering treatment. And I scored for behaviors of the children toward the dog, my dog Maddie in that case. And I watched the videos back 3 times to do my scoring. And in the second viewing, I turned the volume off. And all of a sudden, the screens became alive with much more information, because once the volume was off and I wasn't focusing on what words and language were being stated, I could see so many more things. And similarly, in my work as in doing equine assisted services and watching movements and communication happen across the treatment team, especially between the horse and the participant in those environments, I have gained quite a bit of skill in being able to observe nonverbal behaviors. But what I didn't realize until I worked with Rachel is that the range of that ability is much wider than I realized. In other words, I was humbled by how much she could see in the horses. I didn't realize that there was such a more ability to see things than what I've been doing recently in my own practice, in my own life. And watching her watch the horses, I just was amazed at how much she could see. I've been enamored with horses since I can remember, and I'm always looking at them as much as possible. And yet, there's so much I have not been seeing. So I'm motivated to continue observation in my own practice, both in the office and in the barn. Working with Rachel makes me remember how I used to practice hockey. Believe it or not, I played hockey for a while, not well, but I'd love to play. And I used to love playing with people who were better than me, which that was easy to find, by the way. And so the reason I love playing with someone better than me is it made me better, because I could practice. This was a rec team, so everyone was really great. And I could practice my skills and try to enhance them, you know, each time, hoping to be able to be slightly more competitive in the teams I was on. And that's a similar instinct I have here, where I was just so inspired by all that she could view when I was looking at the same scene in the course or in the trainings. And so the idea that these calming signals are moving across species is also incredibly powerful. And I want to gain skills and observation to help my patients better, because I feel like if I understand more what I'm seeing and can learn more about my patient by observing them, that makes therapy better overall. You know, many people are not able to speak about what they feel or may not even be aware, as in the experience I had and recounted in episode 47. And that brings me to my second point, which is body-based training. In episode number 47, I shared an experience I had in the course where I consciously thought and felt something that my physical body was displaying differently. Specifically, I thought I was non-verbally signaling to a horse that I welcomed him to approach me, but I was actually signaling that I needed a moment. And so he did not approach until Rachel coached me to alter my body position. As you heard in that episode, I was, how shall I say, completely astonished by this realization. I have continued to think about the implications here. And introverts, you're not going to like the realization I came to any better than I do. But I believe this means we need to train in ways that incorporate our bodies. Well, I'll speak for myself. I have reluctantly come to the conclusion that learning about this in books, and if you're like me and maybe prefer auditory learning, hearing someone lecture and being able to apply these concepts are very good skills. But this is not a math problem. This is a relatedness that we are part of in the world and obviously then also in our therapy work. So I don't want to practice this in session per se, but I am going to continue to seek out ways to train in this way. It is uncomfortable to my natural tendencies, but it works. I've been practicing the skills she taught me at home with my horses, and you guessed it, they're coming right up to me, just like I'm always hoping they will. Notice I'm going to go quickly off of that one and move to incorporation of cross-disciplinary knowledge. Rachel spoke a lot in episode 49 about the seeking system. This is an idea from Jak Panksepp, who founded the field of effective neuroscience. Panksepp and his team identified 7 basic systems that are common to all mammals. And they are the seeking system, fear, rage, lust, care, panic / grief, that's one system, and play. And they explain, quote, the basic affective systems of mammalian brains are ancient universal value structures of mammalian minds that provide evaluations of the world in the form of categories of individual affective experiences, end quote. So if I can explain this quote a little bit, it's kind of like all mammals share these 7 emotional systems. Affective is another word for emotional. And as mammals, we have these 7 motivating systems that activate to both keep us alive and keep us in homeostasis. So we have a range of things we can tolerate in terms of temperature or hunger or thirst or danger. And whenever our systems assess that we are getting too much toward the extreme of one of those needs, then we're like motivated to come back into balance and have some ways that we figure out how to do that. And that's why the seeking system is part of many of the other systems, because it's what they call the expectancy or the anticipation part that sort of gets us moving to try to solve for the other needs, as I understand it. And it's really interesting to note here that they're suggesting these are primary process systems. And as humans, they articulate that we have a second and third process, that we have secondary and tertiary processes as well. The secondary ones being around emotional learning mechanisms, and the third ones being emotional thoughts and deliberations. So typically as mental health therapists, we're working at the secondary and tertiary process level, but this work is inviting us to consider the ways that our behaviors are shared with our mammal counterparts, since we are mammals, all of our mammal friends. And Panksepp's premise is that all human emotional experience rests on this primary processing system. And as I take it, this is a lot of how the interspecies communication can take place. Because at the root of things, all mammals are processing the same 7 basic affects or emotions. And there are so many implications to this work. Many of them I have explored on the podcast, and many more will come, because this is a large part of the foundation of what interests me in the field of mental health, is understanding our common relatedness with mammals and how that affects our internal experiences as well as our social ones. And Rachel highlighted many of the ways this affects her work as well. But the thing that I want to add here is, before he died in 2017, Panksepp and his team were working to find a way to work with the play system. Play system is much like you would expect. It's the way that all mammals play. And they were working with the play system to see if they could replace the need, or at least reduce the reliance the medical field has on psychopharmaceuticals. As I understand their work, the basic premise is that play encourages the secretion of the neurochemicals found naturally in the body, the ones that the pharmaceuticals are trying to replicate. So their aim was to see if the neurochemicals could be intentionally enhanced naturally through specific play activities, which I hope you will agree is another fascinating thing to be explored. Yet, how I want to draw it to my learning from Rachel is her discussion of how dopamine production is encouraged through her use of scent work with the horses and the relationship to the seeking system. The way she described how this works is very similar to me to the research aims of Panksepp and his team with the play system. In her work, she is teaching the horses to follow or track certain smells. As a reminder, she described this happens in part due to horses having two ways that they smell. The first is kind of on the ground, and the second is up inside their nose, where the scents get partitioned out for the brain to analyze them. And in this process, there is a production of dopamine for the horse. The part that is so striking to me is that the actual behavior that is being encouraged, that being the use of smell in tracking, is a natural horse skill. They do this all the time when they're seeking food, fleeing predators, and more. In fact, they rely way more heavily on their sense of smell than humans do, although we can do something similar. So the elegance of this intervention to me is significant. She's designed an intervention that supports the well-being of horses in human environments that is both easy to implement and builds on the horse's natural capacities. And I witnessed behavior changes in the horses during the course in just a couple of days. It makes me wonder about how this could work from a human perspective. We share the same seven basic systems, so I'm curious how the field of psychology could start intervening in more specific ways to enhance the outcomes for our patients. Hopefully, I'm already doing some of this. For example, I do incorporate play therapy into my work with children. But this one is an open question that needs much more understanding before I will know more specifics. So, I plan to continue working to better understand how all the systems work, and I'll share my learnings here on the podcast. And learning about how they work has been immensely helpful because the cross-species learning has informed my own awareness of humans and our experiences and behaviors. For now, perhaps we can start small in our therapy offices. For me, I'm going to keep studying the appeasement or calming signals so I can really observe what is happening when I do my typical interventions. That's what I thought was really important about the two pillars of Rachel's work. She does have the scent work, but how will you know how horses are responding to the scent work? Well, we refer to the calming signals and we assess that. And I'm going to start doing the assessment in my own therapy practice when I do my typical interventions in order to help me understand at a new level how they are working. And once I have a baseline understanding, then I can be more intentional in the future. It's a really great time to be in the field of psychology. There are so many fun things to learn about and improve and explore. Thanks for being here. And a big thank you to Dr. Rahael Draizma, as well as the Lone Guardian who provided the training that I intended. Links in the show notes to be able to find more about them and all the resources I mentioned in this episode. I hope you'll join us again for future explorations in the field of psychology. And if you'd like to take a step further, there are additional ways to obtain more education and support on our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com. While there, you will find information about the authors and studies featured in the podcast episodes. Also, you will see a schedule of live trainings I offer on the topics featured in the podcast. And you will find information about the Connection Community, a growing group of mental health clinicians dedicated to the study and practice of psychotherapy. Please check out our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com, to learn more. Thanks. Until next time. This is so interesting, right? I hope so. I think so. And in case you're in a similar spot to me that you would like to keep learning, I want to let you know that I'm starting a book club about Dr. Draiesma's work. It starts in September. We'll be reading her book, Language Signs and Calming Signals of Horses, the one that we talked mostly about in this episode. We'll meet once a month, and then she has agreed also to do a final webinar for us overall, and it'll have a specific section for book club members. So we'll meet in September, October, and November to read her book together, and then she'll join us for a webinar in December. The webinar, as I say, will be widely available, so look for details about that. And if you're interested in joining the book club, there'll be a special part of the time with her that's just for book club members. If you'd like to learn more about her work with me, I hope you'll consider joining this book club. There's a link in the show notes with more information, or as always, we have details on our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com. Thanks.